I'd like to call the Appropriations Committee meeting to order, December 2nd. Time is 8:50 a.m. Roll call.
Congressman Tillman.
Here.
Congressman Maker.
Here.
Congressman Norris. Congresswoman Whitehorn.
Here.
Congresswoman Pratt. Congressman Shaw.
Here. Heavenly Father, it is Christmas Day. And I ask you to be with us this morning and be in our hearts, just make decisions, try to deliberate the business of the Osage people. We give thanks for all that you give us, warm houses, good food, Father, adequate nutrition. We ask protections for our children, Father. And we ask you to be with us today. Amen.
Amen.
Minutes approved, 29. Chair entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Congresswoman Whitehorn, seconded by Congressman Tillman. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes as submitted, say yes.
Yes.
Opposed, say no. Last meeting, before last, one of our colleagues, Congresswoman Edwards, had posed questions about the audit. The treasurer was here. He made the call. He read some excerpts from the blog and gave the impression that it was his job. He was allowed to, I won't say it was his job, but he was allowed to choose the audit. Bledsoe and Associates, he advised us, was chosen to do the audit. They have started the audit. And there was a request that RFPs that had been submitted for the audit. He submitted for our review. I agreed to request those from the treasurer. He submitted paper copies about 48 hours ago. And I made attempts to send those out, but apparently I did not choose the proper format. And so I did my best to send it today. There may still be another. Bledsoe and Associates, again, apparently is contracted with us. The controller confirms that. So I thought, I know I at least have Bledsoe here. I'm afraid the texts that I sent out are a bunch of empty texts in a notepad format, so I should ask for some help, but everyone's so busy that day, and I spent an hour to send a bunch of blank ink attachments. But anyway, I do have Bledsoe and Associates, so one of our items of business today is to discuss that. I had been asked to see if someone from Bledsoe and Associates could be here, and I left two messages. In the last 36 hours, I've not gotten a call back either time. And so I'm going to call again today to see if a representative from Bledsoe and Associates could be here next Tuesday afternoon when I have another meeting scheduled. I didn't think they'd be able to be here for this morning because I would have to leave Edmond about 6 o'clock in the morning. So Monday notice up.
When is the meeting scheduled for Tuesday? I saw it notice.
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock.
Yeah,
okay.
So I thought there might be something here. There's the one on the calendar said 8 a.m. I did not have an 8 a.m. meeting scheduled at any time. So if you see it on your calendar, Apple calendar, that's not my deal. So why don't we look at the there's the Bledsoe and Associates. That's I guess the first page, and I went ahead and emailed the format I have, which is a PDF, so we could at least look at it here. Elaine's gonna try to scroll, and they're just telling you who they are.
Would you please scroll down to the greeting, please, again, up there? So that, do you know, June 30th, 2016, the heading says, "To the honorable members of the Osage Nation Congress, Osage Nation, Pawhuska, Oklahoma." Have you ever, has anybody in Congress ever seen this June 30th, 2016 memo?
I don't recall.
It's interesting how they would have addressed it to us.
How would they know to address it to us?
Question.
Congressman Tillman.
Mr. Chair, thank you. It was my understanding, but we were corrected, that we were not part of choosing the auditor, which I think is in the Constitution. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So I'm really muddy there on how that happens and what that's a result of, whether it's standing there versus...
Did we review that language? Do you have to have a copy of the Constitution?
But it seems to me here, when they sent this June 30th, 2016, I don't remember getting it, but I think I was part of the Congress at the time. But it, the first line tells me they're pleased to offer this proposal. So they're offering, as maybe others did as well, to serve as the independent external auditors for the Osage Nation. And they're viewing it here as a great opportunity, but their proposal is going to us. So somewhere along the lines, they were hired and told, you don't have to get Congress's approval, which it appears to me, but it seems clear here that they are asking with an offer. Does anybody else see it that way?
I see it that that's addressed to the Osage Nation Congress.
Correct.
I don't know if I was seated on this committee yet. Had we seated our committees by June 30th, 2016? Yes, no, because inauguration was in July.
Mm-hmm. A few days later.
So I don't know if the old appropriation committee, were you on the appropriations?
I was.
Previous
I don't remember receiving that.
Right. Somebody wanted the language of the Constitution?
Yes, please.
Okay. It's right here. It's in Article 7, Section 13. Up halfway down Section 13, it says, "The powers and duties of the Treasurer of the Osage Nation shall be prescribed by the Osage Nation Congress and will include the mandate that an annual financial statement for the Osage Nation government be audited by a certified public accountant approved by the Congress or by a committee of Congress and presented to the Congress in a timely manner." So somebody knew that they needed to call on Congress in this memo or in this RFP offer, but I don't think, do you know if the Treasurer, if you're department ever forwarded this email to Congress that was this communication that was apparently to Congress?
I don't know if they did. I believe the RFPs came and were given to the purchasing department who then distributed to those who are on the selection committee. But I can't, I don't know, I don't, of course, but I don't know if anybody else did.
Thank you.
Congressman Baker.
When did Mr. Appenbender first come on board, initially interim or?
I believe it was May 1st, it's the official day.
May 1st?
I believe so, yes.
Well, actually what we don't have, these are the responses to the RFP. They themselves are not the RFPs. There's an RFP that's sent out, and then this is a response to it. So it can be interesting to see what the language was in the RFP, to see if it was, I don't know if it had our name on it, or maybe they researched the nation before submitting the proposal and acquainted themselves with the Constitution. Mm-hmm. I don't know that, but I mean, I'm told that sometimes prior to doing an audit, they will actually look at the relevant laws and review the Constitution. Perhaps that's where they came across it. It's just a speculation.
Have they previously done work for the nation before this? Does anybody? Or any of their partners or staff?
I have been informed that Mr. Paul Bradford is one of the chief auditors that's here pulling files at the Nation, and I have emails back dating back to 2013 where Chief Standing Bear is recommending him for a position for the governmental Commerce and Economic Development Committee meeting. And then also I know that after Congressman Standing Bear became Chief Standing Bear, he engaged him to
as a contractor
to do the forensic audit on Osage LLC. And
so he is familiar with the Nation.
Yeah,
is he a CPA?
No.
He is not a CPA. Yeah. My understanding, he is not.
And he's doing
but
the work here. But
let me say, too, that I have been told, so I can't vouch for this knowledge, that it is not uncommon for auditing companies to send people out to pull the documents that are not certified. I've been told that.
But I certainly anticipate that at some point CPAs are going to be involved in processing the data.
Sure. Right. But back to my initial question, if the Constitution says we pick, they obviously have read or are aware of the process that we approve as a Congress or a committee of Congress approve who does the audit, and that isn't so. So is someone breaking the law?
That's a good question, which would lead me to ask another question. The RFP that was put out, is that, do we have a copy of that? Is there a copy available of the actual RFP that the Nation put out?
I have a copy here with me.
Can we make a copy of that, please?
Yeah.
Good idea. Anyway, we'll see how it was worded, but I think
it says, I can tell you, it says Osage Nation, and it has the address, that the normal one that all
so nothing about Congress in
procurement. I didn't see Congress in it at all.
And I believe they got that out of their own research. Someone else knew that, or they read the Constitution. But I guess last year, I was on the Appropriations Committee meeting last year. I don't remember approving the audit last year. So one of the questions that could come out of today's discussion, I see it heading towards, how do we want to take control again, which we should have by Constitution, if there is law that delegates that. I don't think we can delegate that authority to someone else. It's based in the Constitution.
I don't think that the authority is really delegated to the law.
Could but be. Even if it is, the Constitution would trump the law. So I think we
could we ask our legal analyst his opinion?
I always think that's a good idea to ask our attorney the opinion. Do you want me to go get him?
I'm going to go get him.
Is that right?
No, please do.
Mr. Norris, I apologize for coming in late. I've had some vehicle problems.
He rode his motorcycle today.
No. I was working on a different issue, but it kind of relates in that if something is spelled out in the Constitution, obviously, you cannot create law that is in violation of the Constitution, which is exactly, I believe, what Congressman Shaw was stating. And if it's in the Constitution, if those duties are in our Constitution, we need to take a hold of those duties and start doing those duties, in my opinion.
We think the best mechanism to set the... Gill, thank you for joining us here. Mr. Gill, our legislative counsel, is here, and there was a question regarding, we were just reviewing the Constitution, the language of which stipulates that the Osage Congress or committee will approve the auditor to perform the annual audit. We've become aware that this year, at least the last few years, apparently the Treasurer's office has selected the auditor. And why don't you go ahead and pose your question that was specific.
Mr. Gill, thank you. My question was, first of all, Congressman Shaw pulls this up, and no members of the Congress here remember seeing this memo, and it is addressed to the honorable members of the Osage Nation Congress, June 30, 2016. Very first sentence says, Bledsoe and Associates is pleased to offer this proposal. So, in accordance with the Constitution, which says that we as a Congress or a committee of the Congress will be the deciding factor in who we use for the audit for the Osage Nation, these folks are already on campus working without any approval from us. Mm-hmm. Does that break the law? Somebody is.
It's not in compliance with the Constitution. To my recollection, early on in this Congress, we would approve the auditors by motion, not resolution. But I don't. I know that we haven't approved any auditors this year. I don't know about last year. I'd have to go back and look.
Weren't they under a two-year contract?
I believe the previous ones were under three.
Three-year contract.
I believe.
And I went back and found discussions about approval by the Congress in 2012.
Yeah, does anybody have a constitution with them?
I do.
I mean, I've had discussions with the assistant chief over this, and they try to say that there's, let's see, it's section 13 of Article 7, is that right? Powers and duties of the Treasurer of the Osage Nation shall be prescribed by the Osage Nation Congress and will include the mandate that an annual financial statement for the Osage Nation government be audited by a certified public accountant approved by the Congress or by committee of the Congress and presented to the Congress in a timely manner. The executive has tried to make some argument that the approval somehow refers to the audit itself once it is actually done. It isn't logical because the statement is read, the approval is, it comes directly after certified public accountant, and then it says, and then presented to the Congress in a timely manner. So obviously you're approving the accountant first, and then the audit comes and it's sent to the Congress. Are we in compliance? No. The executive branch is not. Treasurer's office is not in compliance. They haven't gotten approved by the Congress.
Congressman Whitehorn.
I believe that we've had a congressman that even called that to the treasurer's attention, and I'm certain that it was called to the treasurer's attention that he needed approval of Congress to.
Recall in the fall session that discussion came up, yes. Right. And so, I don't think anything's been done about it.
No, he did. They didn't come and ask for any type of motion of approval for this.
Congresswoman Edwards.
I think I asked that the accountant firm that was retained by the treasurer come today to talk to us. Did we extend that invitation?
I've called and never gotten a call back in the last 36 hours. So I'm going to call again today and retarget her to come back if I can get her or a designee from Bledsoe Associates next Tuesday at 3 when I've got a meeting noticed.
Well, okay. It seems to me that if that entity has not been approved as required by the Constitution and that we know that we have approved in the past, that's a practice that we've undertaken, then I think we need to tell the treasurer. Going back to what I talked about the other day, when the treasurer took the position that it's not required by law, therefore, so what?
And he read the Constitution first.
I know. I think that we need to continue to pursue this and get this right.
Okay. With you. Assistant Chief Redcorn.
Well, I'm new to this argument, but I understand our position on it. I just talked to the legislative analyst again. Mr. Gill can probably help me with this, but I can tell you what our position is.
Are we recording?
Yes.
Okay. There's a very important comma in our copy of the Constitution over there, and in this early copy of the Constitution that does not exist in the reprinted Constitution. And that comma, I think, has a direct bearing on what you're talking about. Is there a problem?
the missing comma, it sounds like a problem to me.
Just try to let Assistant Chief understand his position.
When what says the powers and duties of the treasurer of the Osage Nation shall be prescribed by the Osage Nation Congress and will include the mandate that an annual financial statement for the Osage Nation government be audited by a certified public accountant, period. I'm sorry, comma. Approved by the Congress or by a committee of the Congress and presented to the Congress in a timely manner. We believe that says Congress approves the audit. Congress does not preemptively approve the auditor. Your own law seems to back that up. In the Osage Nation Code, Section 2-322, under audits, it says the treasurer shall engage annual independent audits by a certified public accountant. We have a difference of opinion.
Okay, let's let Mr. Gill.
And that's our position. That's not.
Again, I would obviously disagree with that. Because if you read it logically, the approval comes first, and then it's presented to the Congress. We obviously aren't going to approve an annual audit and then have it presented to us. For us to approve it, it would have to come to us first. So logically, you're approving the auditor, and then the audit comes to us to be presented to the Congress. There's nothing to approve. Once the audit comes, I mean, what are you going to do? Send it back? There's nothing there to really say, okay, we accept it or we don't accept it. It doesn't make any sense. As far as the law goes, the practice has been the treasurer does generally attempt to engage an auditor, or they would engage multiple auditor firms and then present the one that they feel is best to the Congress, and we approve it by motion. That's how it works.
And that's what I want to ask the Assistant Principal Chief.
Congresswoman Whitehorn has the floor.
And you're next. Okay. Since you gave your position on how you read the Constitution, my question to you is, you were a congressmember for 8 years, correct? Is that correct? Okay. How many audits have you ever approved as a congressmember?
I don't recall.
Have you approved? You don't recall even approving one audit as a Congress member?
Not specifically.
Because I've been a Congress member for 5 years and I can't recall approving one audit. And two of those years I was served with you. So you can't recall if you ever approved an audit?
Not specifically, no.
Congresswoman.
Okay. Well, but even more importantly, if that's the way that you felt and that was your position, why then, when you were on Congress, were you approving the auditors? Because there's clear evidence that we approved the auditor by either a committee or the full Congress when you were on Congress.
Councilman Edwards.
Assistant Chief, continue, respond.
Councilman Edwards, this is a constantly changing environment. And my experience over there is different than my experience over here. Having said that, I feel like as the Assistant Principal Chief, it's my job to represent the position of the executive branch, not my personal opinion.
Okay.
I'm not defending my personal opinion here.
Well, all right. You're speaking on behalf of the executive branch.
Thank you. I always am, unless I, as the Constitution requires, raise my hand and say, this is my personal opinion. My understanding is that the treasurer's already been over here, the treasurer's already presented this position, Ms. Furman's been over here, she's represented the position, she's tied up over there. I said, I'll go over and represent her position once again. That's really the extent of my remarks. This is our position.
But when we talk about the spirit of cooperation and communication, and we now know that we are perhaps uncomfortable with the scope of the audit, and also the auditor that's been chosen. Perhaps we aren't, but we haven't seen, we heard, if I understood the treasurer correctly the other day, we picked the auditor based on, in part on price. And that's not the way I don't know that this Congress would go about picking an auditor based on price.
And so, relationship also.
Okay, go ahead.
So to me, now we're fighting over a comma when what we should be doing is sitting down and saying, is this the auditor? Have the treasurer come and present like we have in the past. I mean, I think you and I said we were called interviewing these folks when we were on a committee together and we were approving an auditor. Have him bring over the information that he had, answer questions for us. Let's go back, look at the engagement that he's signed, and work together to come up with an auditing scheme that's acceptable to both branches. I think that's the idea of approving an auditor.
I'm going to let Assistant Chief Raycorn respond, and then Congresswoman Whitehorn, and then Congresswoman Pratt.
Mr. Cobb had his hand up, and I will defer to him. I can only say that we can have a conversation about cooperation and communication, and then we can have a conversation about the powers of your branch versus the powers of this branch. And those are two different conversations.
But does that mean, so this is another sword in the stone situation? We're going to go forward with this auditor and this audit, and if you don't like it, go do what you can do?
That isn't my position to answer that question, but I would defer to Mr. Cobb.
Okay, Mr. Cobb, you go ahead, and you're here really kind of representing executive, so I'm going to let you continue the response to Congresswoman Edwards, and then we're on to our committee here.
Sure. I want to address the remark about that it was selected on price. I will say that RFPs are all handled by a process. There's a rating sheet that's devised, and the folks that are on the committees rate each RFP on this one. Were six criteria, or compensation was one of the six, and on the point scale, the price represented 15% of the total rating. So there were five other criteria that went into the selection. All RFPs that were received were rated the same against the same measurements, and the compensation component of those measurements represented 15% of the total score.
Nice.
I want to make sure I identify that.
Let me go ahead and get back up here. Sorry, Congressman, we'll get back to
you. Okay, well, when you get to it, will you ask him who selected this auditor then? Because I thought
okay.
It was the attorney.
We'll get back to him, but I've had members waiting patiently here. Congressman Whitehorn?
Well, I can't remember what I was waiting patiently for, but I'm going to ask the question. Who was on the committee that chose this, Mr. Cobb?
I don't know all the folks. I know I was involved. I was on the committee, but I don't know who else. I get the RFP. I get the responses. A rating sheet. I'm asked to rate. I send them back to the purchasing department, who handles all the RFPs, whether it be for the audit or a machine. And then I'm done. And
so
the purchasing department ranks.
So is there a standard operating procedure of who is on the rating committee for RFPs, or does it change from engagement to engagement?
I believe it would change because, you know, you wouldn't, I would think you wouldn't expect a school teacher to be involved with this versus someone from my office or elsewhere. So I think it's all based upon the discipline.
And according to your procedures, who chooses the selection committees for each one of these?
I'm not sure. I probably need to ask the purchasing department. They handle all RFPs.
Congresswoman Pratt.
I forgot what I was going to say to you, but I will just follow up with that. I think that is how it works as well. Like if it was a social services, they pick most of the people who work within social services have a committee and have the RFP sheet. Will you give me a chance just to back up just a little bit? Also, I think that there's constitutional language to support. It says that that it's approved by Congress, whether or not the RFP process applies to the approval of Congress on there. I don't know the legal answer to that, but I know that there wasn't a member of Congress sitting on the selection committee. I'm not aware if there was or was not one. So I feel pretty certain that there wasn't.
Yeah, I know I was. I don't know who else.
Okay.
I got an email from the purchasing
office. I just needed to say that constitutional language says that Congress, approved by the Congress. So whatever way we choose to do that, maybe we need to set that in rules.
Now we're going to set it in law.
Okay.
Tomorrow.
Congressman Tillman, then I'm going to ask if the committee feels like they want to take any type of action in this direction here, because we've got limited time, we've got a late start, and I do want to go over the projected revenue.
Again, I just want to address that to the honorable members of the Osage Nation Congress, that was addressed to us. Before I got here, it was addressed to you all. And there's no one at this table that can remember receiving this. Where did that block come from? Who decided that, that doesn't need to go to the Osage Nation Congress? It's clearly to offer this proposal. And it was addressed to us, something as huge as an auditor.
Mr. Cobb, do you have an answer for that?
Yeah, I don't have an answer, but I think for some clarity, when RFPs, we all have a copy of it, I've looked at it, I didn't see anything that says respond to Congress or TDLA, whomever might be submitting or providing the RFP. It has Osage Nation and the 627 address. The way I understand it, when RFPs come in, they have to go to the purchasing department, so they don't go elsewhere, perhaps be tainted or manipulated, or so. And my guess is that the reason they went to the purchasing department is because of that element. Again, that's probably my guess or my opinion, but in the spirit of fairness to everybody who submitted an RFP, they all go to one spot, and that may be in the Competitive Bidding Act. I don't even know that.
One last, Mr. Cobb, that you were on the committee to select the auditor.
I was, yes.
That's a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah. Any RFP would be, I would think, yes.
But to select the auditor, that's a big decision.
Sure.
And you're part of that committee.
Yes.
And you don't remember who else was on that committee?
You know, when I say committee, we didn't meet. The RFPs are sent electronically to whomever, and I got them via the email. I printed off all of them. I haven't covered them with me. And I went through them based upon the rating sheet. There are certain criteria you have to follow. It tells you award points if they meet this criteria. I did that. I handed them into the purchasing department, and then I was done. They rated them. They added up the tally, and then reported them.
This is really not a committee.
Yeah, committee, yeah, you're right. Perhaps as a little simple committee, we didn't get at the table and all decide. It was done in that manner. And the way I understand it, most all I've been involved with are done in that manner.
Assistant Chief, do you have a little more clarification on that answer?
I do. I think that the way that it's done ensures the integrity of it. If three or four members of the committee all get together and start sharing information about what they each think about it, the opinions of each that are filling out these opinions get smudged, but the idea is that you get a clear opinion of one proposal from one member of this group, committee or otherwise, that evaluate them. And that's the best way to do it.
Okay. Mr. Peel.
It occurs to me that maybe we just need to ask the treasurer, does he have any objection to the Congress approving the auditor?
I'm going to ask him if he has an objection to it.
We're arguing over what the Constitution says, and obviously we're not going to agree with the executive branch, and, you know, barring sending this to the Supreme Court. Is there something, could we have a conversation with the treasurer and ask, going forward, obviously, if we've already engaged this auditor, we could have a problem for this year, and we can handle that, but going forward, are we going to be offered the opportunity, or are we going to have to go to other measures?
Okay. That's a quick question. I know we're in a hurry here, but in the past, through the years when this government was first formed, and I know we have Councilman Edwards and Assistant Chief here were part of this government in the very beginning, was it when these auditors were being selected, did they have to appear here at the before a committee or even be voted on in the whole Congress?
Yes.
Through the years in the past. It seems like when I first came on board here 4 years ago, 4 years and a couple of months, they did appear here in this committee, or at Congress, as I recall. I know they always come and bring their audit in their findings and all that, the gigs and the, you know, how good it was and all that. But it seems like they did also come here before they, I mean, just like, not an interview, but some of
them, they were here. I talked to the assistant principal chief. May I answer that question?
One last question, then let's...
Oh, I'm answering his question. I talked with the assistant principal chief the other day, and we recall telephone and in-person interviews prior to selecting the auditor in, I think, 2012. I know we both slept.
May I?
Mr. Chairman,
I have a vague recollection. I actually only have one of these people coming up here, the auditors coming up here. I do remember that, vaguely. I think my most accurate representation of what's happened since 2006 is a very inconsistent. I don't think we've been at all consistent, if you want to know what I think.
The Constitution says it needs to be approved by either the Congress or a committee of the Congress.
Well, why don't we, I'm going to suggest that we take this topic up again next Tuesday's meeting.
Would you invite the treasurer to please?
Invite the treasurer, we're inviting the auditor.
Yes.
Congressman Wyburn wants to make one final comment.
One more question about the...
One more question, and then we'll move on to the next topic.
Request for proposal. I see that the deadline for submission is July 15th on it, Mr. Cobb. What was the date that it was first published or went out to? That's important to me.
I don't have that information in front of me.
Is that information available?
I'm sure it is somewhere. You know, it was. We went to newspapers and websites. We went to the normal channels. So
if I call Tammy Leeper, she'll tell me the day that she.
She probably has that information. It has to exist.
Because I noticed that Bledsoe Associates RFP was submitted a whole 2 weeks before anybody else submitted their proposal. What that means, I don't know, but everybody else submitted their proposal on July 14th and 15th. Theirs was submitted on June 30th.
Gotcha. And who is Osage Limited Liability Corporation?
Osage LLC.
That's not what this says. This says Osage Limited Liability Corporation.
Well, that's Osage LLC.
I thought the name of that was Osage Limited Liability Company.
They got a problem, it looks like.
In the,
unless it is actually.
No, it says Osage Limited Liability Corporation.
Okay.
Which is not the same thing as a limited liability company.
I wouldn't heard that. Let's go ahead and we just require a motion to postpone. It's not a bill or a piece of legislation. Let me just ask the committee if it's acceptable to put this on the next Tuesday's, and we'll invite the treasurer. I'm going to make every effort to get a representative from the Bledsoe and Associates here. But I'm going to present something to the Congress this morning, and I want to make sure that they're aware of it. Can you bring up that? I have a revised 2017 projected revenue resolution that I plan to make a motion to add to the proclamation today and also move it to first reading. And not sent back to committee. All right, so there are the numbers we have, and one of the things that happened is the $1.9 million in unobligated funds, or also known as unappropriated funds from 16, is off that sheet now. It was on the previous sheet that we passed September 23rd, that 2000 projected revenue report, because it was the decision of this committee that to not see those funds as being available for appropriation until after the annual audit, which will be sometime next year, as early as February, as late as June again. This has been reclassified as a restricted amount because it's got the restriction of 8 votes and it's not available for general appropriations as a retained revenue fund. So this is still on there, but before it had the description of FY 2015 unobligated funds. After the passage, it was yesterday or day before, that the retained revenue fund amendment, and the chief had stated on day one of this special session he supported that piece of legislation assuming he doesn't change his mind and veto it, this is, would it be the retained revenue thing? I have a call into the treasurer to ask him what his plans are for those monies now, because he had sent me a letter early October saying that for his purposes, and his interpreted the language and the dates that were on the piece of legislation that was subject to veto override, as it was FY 2016, the audit of which hadn't been completed. With no acknowledgement of 2015, well, now after passage of the amendment, it's clear we're talking about 2015, and that's where this amount came from. So that's clear. Still on there. Still available for appropriation out of it. I don't know about today. Curious, but today I'd hate to think we put that money in there. In the next 1 or 2 days later, we start appropriating out of it. But theoretically, that's possible.
With any votes?
With eight votes. So, anyway, why don't you go ahead and show the first page here, and it's been filed. This is the file. We'll go to the top. It's got a resolution number. Again, I'm asked that it be added to the proclamation. I hope this committee will give us the votes necessary. What does it take to be added? 8 or 9?
8.
And then I want to also ask, and the speaker is present, that I want to ask that it be placed on General Order Day 1 so it can be read in today and not be referred to committee. Committee knows about it. If you're not comfortable with that and feel like it needs to go back through committee, well, that's what we'll do, but it's unnecessary. You'd agree with that. And then we can move it along. It's pretty straightforward. This is the final version.
I'm trying to remember back what we did. We did the proclamation to include this resolution on there, correct?
Not yet. I'm going to do it this morning.
Okay, good deal.
A lot of stuff has to happen to this to get it in place. Move it on up or down. Okay, this also had the REMA money added to it, as well as those two grants, KSU and I forget what the other one was. There were two grants we also rolled into the tribe. Remember that we talked about that? And in fact, as you recall, the reason we have any money to spend for the lion's share of the tribal request this session comes from the REMA settlement. If we didn't have that, we might have more money or requests coming out of the permanent fund. Or we might already be talking about this guy.
Yeah. Junior?
Congressman Edward.
Permanent fund, Junior.
So we would put this on hold to see if the retained revenue, I guess the retained revenue is already in place anyway, so we don't really have, the law's in place. We wouldn't really have to put it on hold.
I don't think so. I didn't bring this out till after it was. Until after it was passed, and I didn't bring it in yesterday because I hadn't noticed it yet, so I sent out that.
Okay. Well, I was thinking, well, maybe we should hold it until we see, but you were just clarifying Congress's position on what was in the retained revenue fund, so it's already law.
Actually, I believe that may be Monday that I'm planning to do this. Seems like I sent the notice out. Did you see the notice?
You said when you noticed that you were going, what else did you place on the proclamation? Whatever that initial email you sent out to us that you were going to amend the proclamation, you mentioned that you were going to put the retained revenue.
Did I?
Yeah, it's in there.
I'll do it today then. It's right. In there. I hadn't remembered the thing.
Maybe you should review it, but I believe that I read that you were planning on doing this also. There were two things I think that you said you were going
to
do.
That'd be great, because I hadn't remembered that. I was saying, well, I'm going to have to wait 2 days now.
No.
Congressman Edwards.
If you would make some motions in this committee and report out that the committee approves the information contained in that resolution, I don't see any reason why it should go to committee. And then the rest of the members will have the information that you guys have already looked at it, you already approve it, we'll have it in writing, we'll be able to
We're not really approving the resolution because it hasn't been assigned to us. We can approve the information.
Yes. So okay, that way there's no reason to send anything back to a committee that's already reviewed it and said, we agree. As a matter of fact, I don't see why I couldn't move all the way through.
Is there such a motion?
Just tell me which numbers move. Did the IHS multi-year funding agreement change?
No.
Okay, that stayed the same.
Okay.
What changed was these tribal funds.
Right.
To where we put in the Rama settlement, and there were two grant numbers.
Okay.
KSU and I forget the other one.
So that went into non-tribal.
Roll those into tribal. I talked with the budget analyst.
Grant money is tribal money? I thought it would be non-tribal.
It didn't come from, we define non-tribal as federal or other government agencies.
Okay.
The definition. So we were left, so that's not precise, it best fits tribal. That's what we were left with.
Okay, thank you. All right.
It's your bad statement.
Put it all in tribal then?
Yeah.
And then none of the other number, and tell me the numbers have changed down bottom one more time?
Let's see. This obviously didn't change. This number, actually, the number didn't change. It just was renamed and put in under this category.
Right. And the 1.9 isn't subject to the...
We took the 30,000 of program income off.
Right.
Remember that?
Right.
So that's off there. Can't see what you took off, so I'm trying to recollect there. I don't think any other monies were added, which is those.
Okay, all right, thank you. I'm good.
And a reclassification of this amount, draw off the 1,900, the 30,000. There actually was, there's more taken off than added in, actually.
So we need to move to...
Approve the information.
Approve the information that's contained in resolution. Does it have a number yet?
1708.
Move to report.
1708, 1C.
Yeah.
Move to report, so that there's a committee report.
I move to report that the appropriation committee approves the numbers presented in ONCR...
1708.
1708.
There's been a motion and a second. Motion made by Congresswoman Whitehorn, seconded by Congresswoman Pratt. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion, say yes.
Yes.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Chair would entertain a motion for adjournment.
I would like to make another motion before we...
Okay.
I move that the committee chair request the letter of engagement with Bledsoe and Associates from the treasurer.
And also, can I amend that motion to include the members of the committee that selected the treasurer?
I'll restate that if you want to. I move...
It's your withdrawing mistake.
I'll withdraw. I move the committee appropriations chair requests a letter of engagement with Bledsoe and Associates and also the people on the RFP committee who selected.
And their talents, why not? Whatever you, what do you call what you did?
And the names of the people.
I think it's called rating sheet.
And the rating sheets.
Names and rating sheets.
And the names, okay, and the names of the people on the selection committee and the rating sheets.
You saw how that cooperation went, didn't you?
Okay. And is there a second?
Second.
Okay, motion made.
I want to discuss that. I was looking at the term of engagement and contingency, and if we don't know what the letter of, it says, the term of engagement would be for a minimum of one of the nation's fiscal years with a possible maximum of five fiscal years. Osage preference shall apply. So we don't know if we have engaged Bledsoe and Associates for 5 years unless we see the letter of engagement. Now, Mr. Kopp says he doesn't think we have, but he doesn't. He can't remember everything. So I think we should look at it.
Okay.
It'll help us make decisions.
Okay. Any further discussion on the motion? Do you want to clear on the motion? Then all in favor of the motion say yes.
Yes.
Opposed, say no. Motion carries. Congressional Nettles.
All right, but I have a question. As I understand it, where we currently are, there's more in requests for tribal funds than we have in tribal funds. And I believe that there's rules and that would allow this committee to start helping. I mean, I don't know what to do with a bill that we have on the floor today. I remember you saying that there's a prioritization of direct services. But my question to this committee is, are the direct services
we have enough money if we only appropriate for direct services to meet those requests?
I can't tell you that. I can tell you out of the 1.5 million in tribal funds that have been requested, I can't tell you what the percentage is for direct services. I'm afraid I haven't done that analysis.
Okay, because I need that. If we're going to start voting on bills piecemeal, then I need to know that this bill has direct services in it, and if we let this bill for direct services go through, there's still sufficient funding for the other bills that have direct services in them.
Congresswoman?
And just as one member of the committee, I think that we have not done a very good job of presenting to Congress the numbers, the amount requested of tribal funds and the amount available. I mean, usually we submit to Congress a comparison of where we are, requested fund versus funds available for appropriation. And just as one member of Congress, not even an appropriation member, that helps me make my decisions on what to vote yes on.
I did send that out. Was it yesterday afternoon?
We do have
Wednesday
that.
Afternoon? Oh, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Will you also then get some analysis on what the amount of direct funds in it is and all this service funds
direct
is
service.
And all this request? I have a meeting on Monday in education, and I'd like to have that information before Monday.
Are we going to vote on, we're voting on something today that's a...
No, it's only general order day three.
Okay, but we voted on one appropriation bill, which was the $4,000 for sovereignty day. We've already sent that, correct?
Just to tell you what I'm going to do, since it affects our consideration of appropriations, we have amendments that are general order day three today. Amendments are voted on. I'm going to make a motion that it be sent back to general order day two. I have an additional amendment I need to make. Congress will approve that.
Raise it or lower?
Raise it.
Oh, my God.
I understand. It's a direct service, so I'm not. I'd be happy to tell you about it, but
yes.
I don't want to take up the meeting. Okay. I was contacted last evening by Health and Wellness Division Director, who said that they had been advised to withdraw all tribal funding out of the TASC program prior to submitting their budgets before, say, July. And so they did that, was submitted, and as you know, we approved the budget every day in July. And they told me we have some program income. Beyond that, we have no other funding to the TASC program. Treatment alternative street crime that provides outpatient counseling for drug and associated mood disorders. And so they became alarmed yesterday when it became apparent that there was no supplemental funding for that program, and that apparently the chief of staff had no plans to direct more funding to that program. And the statement I got was, I said, well, what happens if we don't get any more funding, tribal funding? We'll have to close in the next 30 days. We don't have enough program income to keep that open. Trying to think, okay, how do we address that? How do we get the question out before Congress, whether they voted up or down? How do we get that out? Well, in this late date, I asked them to develop some numbers for me and a budget about how they would spend another $120,000 in tribal income dedicated towards that program. They got $160,000 last year, 2 months into the year. So I'm not trying to get us to vote on that. I realize it's late. Yes, I had the same type of last year, but I could either ignore them or I could try to help.
But the way appropriations go, what is to guarantee that if we appropriate whatever the amount is to the Health and Wellness Division, that it's going to be spent on what we appropriated for? How do we know they still aren't going to shut that program down? We have no assurances of that.
Well,
if they're not even seeking an appropriation to keep the program open, that might be what they want to do, is shut it down. We'd appropriate $120,000 for that program, only for it to be spent elsewhere.
Well, they can do that even now.
Of course they can. That's what I'm saying. And that's what it sounds like they're going to do, because they didn't ask for an appropriation for it. They were told by the executive to take it out.
What they told me is that the expectation was that the program income itself would be sufficient to fund that program.
That's what the executive said.
But that's not realistic. Congresswoman.
Well, I agree. But, you know, that would, we're supposed to provide annual operating expenses for these divisions in September. And as we all know, we got no information on how they budgeted for any kind of initiative that they were going to undertake. So, yes, I think it's awful that somebody in the administration made the decision that we weren't going to have drug and alcohol counseling anymore. I can't even imagine why they would do that. But apparently they did. And I feel for the folks that are trying to make that work without very much funding. But we have that situation in every one of our divisions. Their leader is the chief of the Osage Nation and his staff. Now, you know that I disagree that the executive staff should be the ones that are controlling how budgeting fans out. But until some of these examples start shining, we start shining a light on some of these examples, I don't know what's going to change. And I agree with Congresswoman Wyborn. It sounds to me like they've decided that that program doesn't work.
I don't know what was behind it. I couldn't tell you that wasn't what was said, but it makes you think that. I understand. All I know is it's a worthy program to provide services to 361 Osages in the last year of drug and alcohol problems.
It's unbelievable that you would do that.
And they do provide some of their own funding, and if it was executive branch's foible, I don't want to use it as an example, it's a closed program to see, say, there you go, that's what happens. I don't feel like I can just let that happen without making an effort.
Well, then, you know, I guess one of the things, going back and looking through, you know, the budgeting of past, we used to budget by line item, by individual department, by individual program, and it sounds to me like we're back to that, even if that would help keep funding in where Congress intends for it to go, but I don't know.
But anyway, that was my plan. I'd love to be able to give it a chance to be voted up or down by Congress, and so that it has a chance to get funded. Short of that, then it could be taken up another time later in the year. The program happens to stay open for some miracle. But that's what I have planned. As far as places for funding from that, see if it's going to be left if we trim down the other parts of the non-direct services or consider the permanent fund.
But they're usurping, you know, we get taken to court because they say that we have overstepped the separation of powers. And what I'm seeing happen to us is I'm seeing that they're overstepping separation of powers by putting late minute requests and using public opinion. Late minute appropriations requests without information, and they aren't giving us the information to make appropriation decisions. But yet, if something has to close down that they've already made a decision about closing it down, and then at the ninth hour they come in and they say, "Oh, by the way, Congress, I need X amount of dollars to keep a program open or it'll shut down." To me, they're infringing on legislative authority there by doing so. And I think that if we play into that hand, if we say this is okay, this is the way that we function as a nation, that we're party to that. And as much as I want them to kind of present good information to us so I can appropriate good numbers to serve the people, how it should be, they aren't. They refuse to do it that way. So I guess we have to decide as a body if this is the way we do the business of the Osage people. And I'm very firm on that because I don't believe that our Constitution or service to our people is designed to function this way. And it makes me sad, and it's a miserable way to function. And it doesn't serve the people well. And it's not about us or them. It's about working together and making it better for our people. And we're not doing that if we play into this is the way that it works now. That's just my opinion.
Assistant Chief, you have the final word.
Well, thank you. I just want those listening to understand the sequence of events from the time leading up to the budget session. We submitted some budgets early, then we negotiated with the Gaming Commission and casinos to free up $3+ million. When we submitted the budgets for the nation that had those $3.8 million, whatever the number was, in them, Congress ignored those. And Congress chose instead a budget that we put up when money was much tighter. And ever since then, Congress has indicated that we're now bringing late budgets. These budgets are very much reflective of what we submitted right before the session, which reflected the increased revenue. But now Congress has taken actions to declare some of that money off limits to put it in an account that's still being negotiated in legislation that's here in this session. So I don't want to go any farther than that, but we put forward a budget that we could live with, and that budget was ignored. And a prior budget that was much lower in value in dollars, that was when money was tighter before we loosened up $3+ million, is the one that Congress has used and the one we're having to deal with now. This, our suggestions for budgets in this session are nothing more than a replay or an adjustment from that later budget in late August, I believe, or early September. I think that's a totally factual and non-political way to look at it. That's what happened. So just so everyone knows that we are not putting forward a budget that we believe in and then coming back and saying, oh, we made a mistake, we need more money. The later budget was reflective of our needs. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think we're going to need to close. It's the session starts in 6 minutes, so if there's no objection, I'd like to declare us adjourned.
That's fine.
Okay. Thank you.
I just wanted to know, in July, they had the plan to not fund the Drug and Alcohol Counseling.
But we don't know that.
They have program income. That's all they have to operate. So, totally.